Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening. Parents, you know the drill. Pregnancy can bring tears, tension, and tirades, but it can also be a time of connection, contentment, and care. When are the ups and downs of having a baby part of a natural process, and when are they symptoms of something going wrong? The United States Preventive Services Task Force issued new recommendations last week. They say mental maternal illness is more common than you might think, and that all pregnant women should be screened for depression and mood disorders during and immediately after pregnancy. We're joined today by Dr. Raj Singh. He's a psychiatrist at Sanford Health Psychiatry and Psychology Clinic. Dr. Singh, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Well, thank you.
Tell me, first of all, how common is this for women during pregnancy? What does the evidence say?
If you look at the data, the incidence of postpartum mood disorders is somewhere around 11 to 20%. So nearly one in five women will have symptoms of postpartum mood disorders. It could be the depression or comorbid anxiety or something in that spectrum. Now, this is data that looks at mood disorder symptoms, not necessarily postpartum blues, which in fact is a lot more common. I'm talking about symptoms that are clinically very relevant. So this is not postpartum blues, which can be, the incidence can be as high as around 40 to 50%.
So is there a definitive line? Is there a big difference between what the blues is and what the actual depression is?
Yes. There is a difference in terms of, it is not uncommon for women to go through a period of usually a few days after a child is born of having some postpartum blues. They tend to be not as disruptive. It is the intensity of these symptoms. But if these symptoms continue for a prolonged period of time, say a few weeks, maybe 3 to 4 weeks, then we start thinking in terms of postpartum depression or a mood disorder that is more severe in nature.
What causes it? Who's at risk?
The risk factors can be multiple. The causes are obviously the same causes that we see with clinical depression. Now let's talk, I'll give you some of the risk factors that we run into. And these risk factors start before, in fact, pregnancy. So if you have women who have a prior history of depression, so during the time of pregnancy and during postpartum phases, these are women who are more likely to run into problems with postpartum depression. Women who have history of anxiety disorders prior to them getting pregnant are at a higher risk. If there is any form of marital conflict during the time of pregnancy, that is also a psychosocial risk factor. Lack of a confidant. If the patient feels very alone, they feel they don't have a support system around them. In fact, studies have shown that if the woman is single, there is a slightly higher incidence of postpartum depression there. If they are dealing with difficult psychosocial conditions, any kind of stressors, any kind of negative life events prior to the pregnancy or during pregnancy also might have an impact on the postpartum phase.
Was it screened before? What's different now with these new recommendations than if you were pregnant last year?
Sure. I think the recommendations, in fact, what the U.S. Preventative Task Force basically has said is that they want every adult to be screened for depression with special emphasis on women who are pregnant or in the postpartum period, because what they felt was that we were not doing a very good job of screening these patients, and the impact of not screening and hence not treating these patients would lead to poor outcomes when the children were growing in that particular environment. So not only does it have an impact on the mother, it also has a negative impact on the development of the child. The screening, I think it just brings it to the forefront. A lot of health systems have, in fact, been doing screenings for the last couple of years. I think, personally, I do feel that the task force guidelines are a little late. A lot of systems and organizations have already implemented them. and have been doing them at some level. What it now will happen is that it makes it a lot more uniform. It becomes more of a standard of care, and that becomes an expectation. Mm-hmm. So I think that will help standardize the care.
What does screening look like?
You know, screening is basically a questionnaire. Generally, what they tend to use is a patient health questionnaire. It is called the PHQ-9. It's a depression screening tool that is used in a lot of primary care clinics. It's a good screening tool. It is basically 9 questions that the patient answers, and based on that, you can come to a conclusion whether the patient might have symptoms of depression or not. But you have to understand that it's a screening tool, not a diagnostic tool. So mm-hmm. The doctor-patient relationship is very, very critical. That conversation still needs to happen. The screening tool doesn't mean that somebody who screens positive has depression. All it means is, yes, they have a higher likelihood of having symptoms of depression or other psychiatric conditions or mood disorders, and that conversation needs to happen between the physician and this patient.
Is there any kind of self-screening that you can do? Are there internet tools where you can answer, find out what some of those 9 questions are and start answering them before you talk to your doctor?
I'm sure you can. The PHQ-9 is a very readily available tool. You can find it over the internet anywhere. It is very readily available. In fact, the PHQ-9 is basically the 9 criteria for clinical depression. But I would warn your listeners to understand that it is a screening tool. Again, if you screen positive on the PHQ-9, you want to take that screener, go to your physician or your provider and have that conversation with them. It is not diagnostic necessarily of depression, because you can have multiple other conditions that could mimic depression but not is truly depression. For example, mm-hmm. conditions like bipolar disorder or bipolar depression, which mimic unipolar depression or might look like depression, and the patient might screen positive, but the treatment would vary. So this is a good starting point to have that conversation, to take that piece of information to your physician or your provider and have that conversation with them.
Let's go back to the risks of not addressing any kind of depression or mood disorders during pregnancy and immediately afterwards. You said there's real impact on the children. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, I think there are multiple studies that have talked about the physical and the psychological development of children in mothers who had postpartum depression, and that the outcomes were not as good in terms of how well these children developed physically and emotionally. So for the mental well-being of the children, it is important that the mother's mental health also be addressed.
Mm. Are there risks of screening?
You know, and that was one of the reasons why when the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force came out with the recommendations in 2009, they had recommended that screening has to be done in settings where you have the ability to provide care for these patients. Mm-hmm. So if somebody screened positive, you must have the ability to make sure there is somebody who can take over their care, assume their care, and provide the care that the patient needs. In 2016, the U.S. Preventative Task Force has changed those guidelines a little bit. They are assuming that there are more mental health resources available now in medical settings, and hence they have changed the settings to say no, that they want their screening done. The negative impact of screenings could be very, very minimal, if at all, or there is that slight risk of misdiagnosis. So again, that is the part that has to be clarified, that it's a screening tool, not a diagnostic tool, and that conversation needs to happen between the patient and the provider.
So let's talk about treatment a little bit. So there's screening, and now there's maybe an issue. Is maternal mental illness treatable?
Yes, it is. And, you know, when we talk about any kind of a treatment approach, I tend to use this model called the biopsychosocial model of a disease, and that is applicable to any chronic disease, including psychiatric illnesses, including conditions like depression. And what we talk about in the biopsychosocial model is that every disease has three components. It has a biological component, a psychological component, and a social component. And when we talk about treatment of these illnesses, we have to address all three components. The biological component, depending on the severity of the symptoms, there might be biological interventions like antidepressants that can be used in patients who suffer from depression either during pregnancy or during the postpartum period. So there are multiple antidepressants that have been studied in this patient population. Then there are psychological interventions. So psychological behavioral interventions are a very important part of the treatment team plan also. And then there are social interventions. As we talked about, the psychosocial stressors, the psychosocial risks, we need to make sure that the social risk factors are also being addressed.
So I'm wondering about insurance now, too. Is the screening covered by insurance, some and not others?
In fact, vast majority of the screenings now are starting to get covered by insurance companies. And I think one area that is now going to be helped is the guidelines coming out from the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force.
So, and the other thing I'm wondering now, too, is as a pregnant woman, a woman gets pregnant, does she already have enough to worry about? Is this, are we just adding one more thing? Now she's thinking about the Zika virus, and then she's thinking about depression. Sure. Are we just giving them one more thing to stress over?
I don't think so. I think, in fact, the evidence does suggest that women do suffer from symptoms of mood disorders during pregnancy and during the postpartum period. And I think this, in fact, gives women a way of bringing this to the forefront, having this conversation with their provider. It just makes it a little easier because studies have shown that women are, in fact, a little reluctant to bring this issue up on their own because especially during the postpartum phase, women can be a little skeptical, a little defensive about how they might be perceived if they talk about their postpartum depression symptoms. You know, there is still a little stigma associated with mental illnesses, and there is this concern that, oh, people might think that I can't take care of my child. I might end up losing my child. So they tend to be very defensive about their symptoms. So I think screening takes that, minimizes that stigma, and it's a conversation that the patient can have with the physician in the privacy of that office, and it can be addressed there. So I think it, in fact, gives them a way of having that conversation with their providers.
How about men? Do they, fathers, any evidence that fathers go through the emotional ups and downs at all as well?
In fact, there is a little bit of evidence that there is an impact on the father also. And not only, and the impact on men is a little different. They feel they're not ready sometimes. They feel they don't have experience in helping the mother. So psychological interventions where the couple are having a conversation with a therapist or with a counselor and bringing up these fears and talking about it is very, very helpful.
So talking about is the first step to everything there.
Yes, depending on the severity of the symptoms. If the symptoms are very, very severe, it can lead to conditions like postpartum psychosis. That is where I think psychopharmacology takes over. That is where medication becomes a priority.
And then that's a real risk-benefit discussion to have, too, when you're talking about someone who's pregnant or
yes.
Nursing, right?
Yes,
right.
Absolutely. With medication, that's a decision that has to be made in conjunction with your provider.
Right. Dr. Raj Singh, anything I should have asked you that I didn't on this topic that you want to make sure to get in?
I just want to make sure that the people are aware that screening is available and hopefully all primary care clinics will use these guidelines and enhance the level of screening that is being done in primary care settings.
Dr. Raj Singh is a psychiatrist at Sanford Health Psychiatry and Psychology Clinic. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Singh.
Thank you.
If you'd like to take a look at an online depression screening tool, we've got a link for you. Just head to sdpb.org/DakotaMidday. We'll put that up after today's show.